but you could say it like this, so.
Aber das wird im Verbiss. Diese Person, du vorgast diese on the beach. Vorgast sie von on the beach.
So, what have I done?
Deserve this punishment. It's a good thing when you come out of TV. I wouldn't like myself to come out of TV. I'm too dark. You're lighter. Welcome. Good morning. I even see those that I've missed for some time. Mzala, we're missing you in Limpopo, but I see you're back. Today, I'm hoping that it's going to be a short meeting. There's two presentations that we're getting from the department. It's about security in hospitals, which is going to be the first one, and then we'll engage with it. And after that, it's going to be about the National Health Insurance, and we'll engage with that one. So that's all that is in the agenda, members. The only thing that I need to mention is that when we looked at the National Health Insurance, and we said we needed to hear from the department what is it all about, the green paper, which has been gazetted. I requested Council of Medical Skills to be with us for obvious reasons that are going to come towards the end. Not that they're going to say anything, but to be part of the discussion as Council of Medical Skills. So I'm not sure, but I think both the department and the Council of Medical Skills, they know the members. I don't think we should waste time, I'm not sure. But if you want to introduce yourself, members, but I think both of them, they know all of you. And there's not been a reshuffling or new elections. We're still going well, according to the old elections of the national and provincial local elections. So there's nothing that has changed. Probably the department might be bringing other people that we don't know. So it's up to them to introduce those that are. We don't know. So I'll give over to Udidi for the presentation if she's ready. Okay, Didi.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. Good morning. I just wanted to say that the screens are not coming down, so if you give us a chance in your assistance with the screens so that you can reflect the presentation.
Oh, okay, thanks, DJ. I'm as illiterate as you are, as far as lowering down those skills.
I'm illiterate, but it's outside my area of
operation.
It's Parliament.
I've asked somebody to come and do it for us. We'll just give you a few minutes to organize yourself when that person is coming to law. Oh, there's this. Oh, thank you, sis.
Thank you, Chair. By way of introduction, I'm Malibona Precious Masoko, Director General of Health. I'm here with the team. On the right, I've got Johannes Kasa, who's our parliamentary officer. We also have Dr. Dumi Funani. Dumi Funani is our researcher. He's in the technical unit in the Office of the Director General, seconded by the Medical Research Council. Behind me, I have Dr. Bridget Strachan, who is been working with us on the development of the HR strategy. I'll make reference to that, Chair, when I present NHI. I've also made copies for for members of the HR strategy, which is out for comment at the moment. And I also have with me Dr. Anne Van Pile. When I do the presentation on NHI, I will also invite him to come in. He's our health economist and also a cluster manager. We also have the deputy parliamentary officer in the office of the minister. He's just here as support. You probably know him as well as Joe. But I thought I should introduce the main team from the department. Thank you. Chair, on the report on safety and security, just by way of background, Chair, when we had the death of a doctor in in Mpumalanga, but also a nurse that was raped, the National Health Council took a resolution that we needed to set up a safety task team, which I chair. And this is a task team that involves various safety officers from provinces. The presentation outline will be as follows. We'll just give a background and progress to date, what has been done so far, and the provincial security audits that we've done so far, and some of the work that is underway and the recommendations. We've done some safety assessment just as part of the core standards. Chair, as you may recall, the standards have been approved. The standards have been approved by the National Health Council. We use that as a basis of assessing some of the key security issues that need to be in place. But we also understand that there are other aspects of security that go beyond the core standards. But just the preliminary work that we did, it shows that there are weaknesses in safety and security of health facilities, but there are also a number of incidents that we are aware of where staff and patients have been injured or killed due to poor security provided in health facilities. The minister invited a South African Medical Association to share with us some of their safety and security concerns, and the presentation that they share with us is in concurrence with our audit findings, and we've, as a basis of that, recommended to NHC to consider certain steps on how we can improve security. We've tried to outline this on a short, medium, and long-term basis, and for the short term, we established a task team just to improve physical security, including utilization of CCTVs, conducting of audits, but also for provinces to come up with action plans. On a medium term, we would like provinces to implement the norms and standards and enforce contracts, because we identified the enforcement of contracts as one possible weakness, but also the upgrade of security officers' position that are in full-time employment of the state. On a long-term basis, we've proposed that there must be a career path for security personnel, and that for new establishments that have been designed, they should be designed with safety in mind. The resolution was taken in July. Most provinces were present except Western Cape, Limpopo, and Gauteng province. Limpopo province was preparing for the presidential visit. They couldn't join us. Gauteng province had just appointed a new person. He had just started and he couldn't join the meeting. We didn't get a specific response from the Western Cape. External security expert was also invited from PRASA to advise us. We also invited NIASAS and Defence Force to also give us advice on security, because this is outside the scope of health. Just a preliminary report on the assessment of the provinces. A number of provinces have conducted audits, and some have done some assessment of their safety and security. In Mpumalanga, they mainly focused on hospitals. KwaZulu-Natal, they had a much more detailed plan and strategy. I think if we were to assess all the provinces, KZN seems to be a best practice that other provinces could study. Free State had targeted hotspots, and improvement plans are based on just those hotspots. security measures are reactive to incidents. They are not overall integrated into a strategy. The master keys of institutions we saw in some provinces are still kept by unknown individuals, meaning in the security arrangements. This is a key area that needs a special focus, and CCTV cameras are not necessarily strategically placed. This is just but an example of some of the cameras, some of the work, the footage that we did, that there are no blocking points. For instance, in this case, people can just go in through those openings that have been created in those concrete fencing. And our view is that there must be proper fencing, and the trees and grass must be cut to enable clear view of the premises. But also here, people use other means to bypass security. So there are other measures that are needed. We thought we should just show this by way of example. On a medium-term basis, we thought that the annual performance plan should also focus on security, and we would like line functions to also have security clusters, and provinces must ensure that they have a security manager. And officers are normally moved between different functions. For instance, in one province, they have a legal officer who also plays a security officer role, meaning we need a dedicated security person, not people who are moved between jobs. There are also good practices. Like I said, KZN is a good practice province. They have a very good enforcement approaches on the service level agreement, and would like to use this as a basis of training other provinces and introducing measures that have been introduced in KZN as a good practice model. In KZN, they have tied SLAs and penalties for poor performance a service level agreement. But there's also a lack of uniformity in others. So what we've done, we've proposed that for the areas where the security manager is located in the office of the MEC or the HOD, would like to recommend that for the other provinces. The other provinces, the awarding of contracts of security is decentralized to district level, and this is where there are problems with the coordination and oversight over the service level agreements. And the provincial officials are not necessarily involved in the entire process, and thus they cannot supervise a district. Sometimes securities are requested to play the role of porters, particularly in facilities, because of shortage, and because of late payment or non-payment of security guards by service providers, some are sort of not responsive to the security needs. So what we then agreed is that we'll use, like I said, the template that KZN is developing, and we're going to use that template to implement in every province and provide training and help and review all the contracts, because this is where our problems are, particularly where the security services are outsourced. So with dealing with poor performance, this is the approach that KZN follows, which we wanted to share with you. For instance, with the contracted services of security companies, if a security officer is not posted, KZN, a provincial department, charges them a penalty of about 1,000. Where there are no radio, unserviceable radios, they charge them a penalty of 250. If security officers come drunk or under the influence of alcohol, they're removed from site and they charge the company 1,000. They use security officers, for instance, if they are not registered, they also charge a fee for that. Where instances where security officers are not, for instance, if they've agreed on a particular grade in the contract of a security officer and the company sends someone of a lower grade, the province charges them 1,000 per shift, or they remove them from site. If supervisors do not visit sites to check the performance of security companies, they charge them 500 per event. So repeated occurrences or failure to comply with the service level agreement and the terms of the service level agreement may lead to cancellation of the agreement. Now, this is an example of what we recommend provinces can do just to ensure that the contractor can perform, and we're using that as a best practice model. So, for instance, we're going to be working with the provinces to finish the audit of the security status in provinces and look at whether we can identify other areas of weakness that need to be strengthened. We are also going to make use of an expert in security matters, because we're not experts in the field and we'd like to get proper advice. On the basis of the outcome, we'll then come up with an action plan and map out clear timelines and milestones. But of particular importance, as part of the infrastructure plan and revitalization, we also want to see whether the funds for infrastructure cannot be used as part of the improvement of the security in the facilities. Thank you very much. Dr. Funan is coordinating this work and he'll be available also to respond to some of the questions here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cynthia. The reason why we decided to call you to tell us what's happening is because of the members have been worried about what's happening in the institution, that doctors are killed, nurses are raped. So it was on that basis that they called. But we do want to go on to some of the things that we think, as we as the people who are moving around, that we see them as challenges. I think one of them is, you know, we've noticed that in some of the hospitals, the management would seem to have some connection with the security company. And as a result, if something wrong happens, you find that the security company is not dismissed to get a better company that is going to do the job. And obviously, the hospitals are very vast. And the other area which probably is very pertinent with what happened in Mpumalanga is that it was a doctor and a patient. Now, if there's one thing that is a challenge, is to have a doctor, I mean, to have a security person in a room, in a consulting room, where the doctor is confiding or the patient is confiding to the doctor, because there must be privacy there. But what happened there, we don't know whether it was the doctor and the patient in the room or whatever happened, but one tends to think that you could correct that by making sure that anybody who goes into the consulting room is not carrying a knife or a gun or anything that could be dangerous. But these are some of the things that made us to think that we needed to call you so that you could talk to us. The other challenge, or the other question probably that is going to come from the members, is we see in the olden days they used to be security from the hospital that is budgeted by the hospital and is actually there. But we see a lot of private companies. Are they not a little bit more expensive than having it in-house? But it's something that you'll have to answer. Remember, that is the presentation about the security. It's up to you to ask questions. The department is here. Okay, I see Honorable Hussein, I see Mr. Khwala, I see Memora and Mr. Kenya.
Chair, thank you very much. The question that I want to ask is that, is there any statistics available in terms of the incident rates at the various hospitals or province? The reason why I ask that question is that if you're using KZN model in the other provinces, surely one of the key indicators must be the reduced or the lowest number of incidents in KZN. Otherwise, it would make no sense to use that model. So, do you have that information?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks the DG for the presentation, which I think it has been long overdue, because the incident which recently happened was not the first one. As the Chairperson remember, when we went to Eastern Cape, we still, in 2009, we were told about the nurse who was raped on duty, and it has okay, but we are in. I would like to know because you find that when priority is being done, mostly it's done at the hospital, you find the clinics are left. And I'm really, as you know, that primary health care is my passion. Is this going to come? And mostly you find that when some clinics were covered or health centers were covered, some were not covered because of financial constraints. I would like to know if the department has really looked at the financial constraints. And another thing, at a certain stage when you go to this to the clinic, or you find that there is an old gentleman at the gate who is very old, just nearing the exit. When you look at him, he needs security more than the nurses who are inside. How are we going to really look at those people? And you find that they are there, they are not even armed. We know that arm can even affect maybe certain things, but I will really be so comfortable and relaxed if the people who are there, they can really face with whatever comes there. If people come in with guns and the security company doesn't have guns, what is the real need for that to happen? Again, you talked about whereby the province is not involved is at the district level. But in the Northwest in particular, you find that the tender is provincial. The people just see a lot of people coming to their facilities by way of being deployed from provincial. They haven't participated. And mostly, you find that the people who get tender, they are not even within the locality. I will cite an example, because I was a nurse and working in a clinic, whereby you find that if you were the owner of the security, I'm in Manzere in Moses Kotane in Northwest. The person is staying in Midrand. Then there is a problem whereby if this person, there is no security for that day, whom to contact? I contact somebody who's in Midrand, who, if he's going to help me, he has to move from Midrand to wherever I am. And those things, mostly it was attributed to the tender being used or being done at provincial level, while other people from the district and the sub-district are not involved. Then lack of security, it really impedes on service delivery, because at a certain stage, the clinic cannot operate 24 hours. Like, I know there is a clinic, Manamakuteng, in Moses Kotane in Northwest. The 24 hours was closed or was terminated because the nurse was raped, the car was stolen, and had crossfire. And the nurses were saying they cannot, like, risk their life. Therefore, I would like to really you emphasizing on the armed security, because there is difference in pricing. And I think when you say that Northwest focus on certain facilities, I would even want this to be unpacked. What is certain facility? Because facility is a facility. Then finally, Chairperson, I will even want to know
how is the missed? Because when you talk about security and safety, security, more especially the security, there is a lot of things. How is minimum information system working with this? Because I think that's where the security and safety belong. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. We're going to ask you a memory, but I just have to. I'm glad I'm reminded the Eastern Cape one. The reason I'm mentioning it is because that nest was raided at night. And the people who raided started shooting, and they shot one male man who was out of duty. And then, interestingly, what happened is that he asked for compensation. They both asked for compensation. And the male was compensated as somebody injured on duty. But the nurse, it was said she was not going to be compensated. Because there's nothing, I think it's something that probably you need to follow up in Eastern Cape to what actually happened. I'm just reminded. Memo?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Excuse my voice. DDG, on slide 5 you talked to the issue of CCTVs. You know what, my worry is that how is the department going to financially sustain the working or function of the CCTVs, because earlier they say went to the Gauteng Hospital, they do have the CCTV, equipment and all that, but they were not working for more than 5 years because of budgetary issues. The CCTV, equipment was supposed to be upgraded, something like that. Otherwise, it couldn't function with the old software, something like that. But my worry is this was, millions and millions of money that was needed only for one hospital to sustain the function of the CCTVs. So I just want to know, what is the future plan in terms of, CCTVs, in especially central and tertiary hospitals, where we see hotspots in terms of security issues? And then the other question is, I think this issue of master keys is long overdue, honestly. This is, lack of leadership, mismanagement and everything. In hospitals where you find something like this, that the harsh punishment should be even the CEO being suspended, because as the head of the facility, you need to know what is happening whenever and who's doing what where, So we really need to look into this management issue. And the other one, the issue of contracts or tenders and all that, there's a slide where you mentioned that the Department of Safety, in some provinces, they are actually responsible for, the tendering process and everything. Will you in the future, look into this to say every province, we should have like one policy, one protocol nationally, and everybody should follow that? There'll obviously be changes there and there, but it shouldn't be so huge to affect the functioning of the security system within hospitals. And in future, would you consider having the use of panic buttons? Or, I'm thinking of Baragwanath Hospital infrastructure to say, we had incidences there. There was a doctor who was probably raped. Apparently, raped going to the laboratory. I think it's 2 years back or something. If they had a panic button and, the conditions around change to be threatening, they could just easily use the panic button. And the last question is on the types of security guards that we have. I know in some provinces they use different private securities for, different hospitals. Like the chairperson already alluded, is it possible that we can have our own trained hospital, securities and, keep costs and use like the guarding system? There's something that they call, I think it's Guard Patrol or Guard something, where they've got different stations to sort of clock to ensure that people are not sleeping and, sitting at one place doing no patrol. And my last one would be on the late payments or non-payments of security personnel by the security company. What about the hospitals? Because I know at some stage we have been culprits not paying the company on time, therefore the company unable to pay their personnel on time. Thank you.
Didi, I think we're talking about security of patients in the hospital and of personnel in the institution. Now, partly we are concentrating on physical security, but there's another security that is very pertinent in the personnel area, where people could mistakenly prick themselves with HIV things and all those things. And I know in some hospitals, there's somebody who pricked himself or herself in Umtata, only to find that when they were trying to look for things to that protect them from doing that, there was none in the hospital. And these are some of the security things that we think that they are important. Maybe when you ask that, and there was something that used to be called danger allowance. I'm not sure whether it's still there. And that goes with the security of some personnel in psychiatric institutions, where people get beaten by patients or patients get problems from the personnel themselves. So I think this is part of security. Mayor Kenya.
Thank you, Sebastian. Thank you for the presentation. I think some of the questions partly have been asked, but just to add on the issue of taxing appointments, you get any term of office, I'm concerned about, because you notice that this is a really critical situation. When is there any time frame or term of office for the testing for these short-term measures? As you say that this has been happening for quite a long time in all these provinces. Hence we say that the reason for not having 24-hour service is due to this problem. And I'm also concerned because there are remote rural areas which need security, which need 24-hour service. Noting that some of the provinces or some of our areas haven't got the two-stop service, and not accommodated by the two-stop service centers in case of having community health centers. Therefore, they are dependent to a 24-hour service of for a clinical situation. But due to this problem we're talking about, there is no 24-hour service. So therefore, this is really critical. Also, you talked on page 8, bullet number 3, about the lack of skills on safety and security. Are there any skills development programs in these provinces? Because I think that is also critical, noting that we say that we have got these private companies which only use the batons to defend themselves, even in patients, where there's also a medical hazard. As you said, some of the patients now do speak to the security if they want to abscond. Therefore, I just want to check if we've got any skills development program to the officials that are there in hospital, if we say we want also to take part in spite of having these private companies. Also, again, on page 6, bullet number 3, talked about some provinces don't have provincial security managers. To my understanding, the Department of Safety and Security are there in the provinces, but what is lacking? Is it the organogram? What makes us not to have those security managers as well as the department in the provinces? And I think lastly, because some of my questions have been asked, lastly, on the issue of the massacres which are still being kept by unknown individuals, what measures have been taken? And Honorable Moore has just stated out that this has been a long burning issue. What measures are there to investigate, to carry out and to identify who is having these coups, and then also to take control of the coups? Because really this is difficult. We can make some other measures, but if massacres are kept somewhere in a place that is not known, that is a risk which also must be taken seriously. Thank you, Sir President.
Thank you. I think we know for a fact that part of the security is to secure the goods and things that are in the institution. And I know in some hospitals all over the country, people have actually stolen medicines from the hospital out. And you find that if the security company has been there for more than 6 months, they get to know who to work with. And it's easy for you to get out with some, they call them TTOs, they take treatment, and you go to the secretary, they said, okay, it's you. You can take the drug. And I know that nurses will open up clinics using stolen drugs from the hospital, running clinics with stolen drugs from the hospital. Darekhana?
Sir, I was not going to say anything, but I've been provoked. Because I think we are now moving away from the real issue here. I think what when this request was made, we're really talking about security of patients and staff. You know, there might be other problems around problem of theft and all other things, but I thought if we can be more focused to talk about the security of staff and patients in those particular institutions so that we don't miss the point. I'm not going to ask questions, I'm just going to have some contributions about, look, where private companies, because you cannot avoid engaging private companies, not during this time in South Africa where private companies are being used. But the problem of private companies is that they underpay their staff and their staff goes on strike. And that on its own creates problems for the people who are supposed to be supplied with service. So we have got to be able to, as we talk about this, we have got to take that into consideration. And the second point is that if you are going to introduce technology, you are going to need technicians to be able to manage that particular technology. And my own view is that these CETAs are not being utilized. They don't utilize the money and they are not utilized. And we really have got to look into how do we ensure that before we introduce this technology, that we approach them to be able to finance the training of people who will be utilizing. And the point of the public places being gun-free as a policy, vis-a-vis the security which came guns. In Bloemfontein, there is a private prison. They don't wear the same uniform as the correctional services. I like the correctional services staff as their uniform. But those wear different uniform. They don't use guns in that particular prison. The prison warders, whatever you call them, they don't carry guns around the prison. And I think we have got to look at that. I'm more concerned that people who carry guns usually get guns taken from them easily. So we should not talk as if when people carry guns there will be more security. It might be more dangerous.
Thank you very much. You're going to respond, Didi. But I just want to redirect us slightly. We said when we wrote to you, we said we wanted to know about security in public health facilities. We were not specific on any particular part. And we are people who are dealing with communities. And we oversight you. And for us to be able to deal with communities and explain to them as to what is going on, we need to get information from you. And that's why we call you here doing the oversight. And calling you here is not very frequent. We call you a certain time. So that makes me think that probably members should ask as many questions as about security as they want. Because the next time that we might be meeting Department on Security might be next year. Yet we need to talk to communities about what is it all about security. I just want to allow members to ask as many questions as they want so that when we get out of here, we're very clear of what the department is trying to do and how we should be talking to the community so that they understand that this one cannot be afforded, this one can be afforded. I don't think it's a question of not being focused on what we call them. We deliberately called you to talk about security in health facilities, and that includes personnel that is in the hospital, that includes patients, that includes the things that you have in the hospital that can move out of the hospital, all those things. That includes whether those people that are working there are not going to get diseases. They come in there as people who are well, but they come out with HIV and AIDS because they treat themselves, something has happened. All those things is security in the community. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank communities and stuff. Everybody get help in the public hospitals. I'm very happy that today we are meeting here, making a statement to the country that we are very much concerned about their safety. I'm also happy to say to you, I see the participation of, when you talk about safety and security, the first thing that comes to my head is the police. But also I'm happy that you did meet with them, you engaged with them. But your recommendation here, I don't see anywhere else where you talk about police patrols in the public hospital 24 hours. I think also that can be very, very helpful. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I wanted you to be there, sir. Sorry, Mango.
Chairperson, thanks for the presentation. Mine is just one simple question. On page 3, bullet slide number 6, where they say other provinces didn't partake. If we are serious about security in this country, I think people must take security serious irrespective of who they are and where they are. Can we maybe get the reasons why it didn't partake? And then another question is that we are told that the KZN, what do you call it? Yeah, maybe the process around KZN is the module is a little bit the one that we can use. But I hear that there are people who are being taken off while they are drunk, or maybe because of other reasons. How do they replace those people? Let's say if I mend the gate and then I come drunk and then I'm being removed. Is there a quick replacement, or maybe that place will be just left to open, so that when we adopt models, we should know that what are the pros and cons of it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Matula. Manuel.
Thank you, Chairperson TJ. Thank you very much. You're talking, slide 5 talks about, you mentioned carrier passing. Who is responsible for carrier passing of security? Is it Department of Health, or is it the people responsible for the security? If not carrier passing, if there's no carrier passing is happening, do they ever go for in-service training because this is a company? We are here today talking about safety in public hospitals. To date, do you have a statistical record of issues where people have been exposed to unsafe practices from whoever comes from outside or inside? The next point is, yes, tenders are, there are tenders for people to be brought in, and you choose from whatever. Do you ever do, does the department do a forensic audit of the security company so as to have at least an idea of its track record? Because we've got so many bogus, this bogus, that. This will lead to a question that we are aware that recently on the news there was a big clinic or center or something in one of the provinces where there were medicines and whatever that were being dispensed. The question is, how did those medicines get out at that extent if there was good security? Which is really a problem. And we are also looking at security risks from people who just come in and do things. But the very visitors
that comes into the hospital. All sorts of visitors, even pharmaceuticals, which we think are the right people, they'll come in bringing things, and things go wrong. Do we vet those people to a certain extent? To take on what Honorable Sekgala Desai was saying, to say primary health care, we've got clinics all over the country. We did an oversight in Limpopo. There is a wonderful clinic, but there are taverns surrounding the clinic. In as much as that, after hours, the nurses are kept locked in the clinic. They don't go to residences. They are in the clinic to do the service because of the myriads of taverns. Yeah, that's a problem. And as a department, to what extent can you safeguard, as a department now, safeguard the security of the personnel working in those clinics after hours? Because we need their services all the same. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I don't see, and maybe we'll give over to you to
thank you,
Chair.
Sorry, there's
one last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry to be late. Chairperson say we must talk on behalf of the community where we come from. The other issue of security is on the pharmacy. I'm talking this because of where I come from. There are those sources who are using the ARV on behalf of the Nyaope because they can't afford the Nyaope, they don't have money. So ARV, they get that fruit of that, I don't know where. Now the problem is that if the camera are not being used in the pharmacy, that's the way the ARV can go easy to those people so that they can use them for their drugs. So I'm willing to, the DJ must make sure the camera are on all the time in the community. Thank you, sir.
Somebody was asking, could you tell us what is Naube? Can you quickly explain what Naube is?
Nyaope is like
this is just a contribution to say, you know, that another type of security where you do asset tracking, I mean, in your plan or whatever, if you can also put that, it will definitely help. I know that you've got this identifying, text with the barcode and all that. If some of those can be done in such a way that if people take, like, laptops or computers out of the hospital, then it will, you know, set an alarm off, something like that. It will actually help in terms of asset management and inventory as well. Thank you.
That was the last question, but we must say our tea will be at 11. So if there are certain things that probably you want to ask, but we're going to give over to DG and the team to answer questions. And then if she finishes, then we can probably go on to another small bite before tea. But I want to say, DG, we had an oversight in Limpopo. When we looked at security, and I think members were happy. In the facilities that we visited, were happy. But the point that I want to bring is that we owe you some money because three of our members became sick and they got treatment from your hospital. Some of them, they stole it from your hospital. So you need to send bills to them. I think three of them, one of them is the one who's got a bedroom voice who was talking that side. The other one is next to me. She had sciatica, and even myself, I had diarrhea. I thought I had cholera, so we all stopped.
that was discussed is the role of private security companies versus security officials that are in the full-time employment of the state. This is an issue that I think is going to require a policy position. It's an issue that requires further work because we have understood, particularly from our colleagues in the security cluster, that it is not possible for police to be available full-time to provide security for a property of the state. But second is that perhaps the question that you have to answer is whether the police should be available full-time to provide security for property of the state or for members of the public. And the policing services, how do we then draw a line between what should be available for property of the state and what should be available overall for security of ordinary members of the public? And it's a broader security issue that the security cluster is addressing. And we're mindful of the fact that we cannot take over that function, but we also rely on their support for guidance and what good practices are. The other issue, Chair, that we have discussed at length is for those provinces and facilities that make use of security companies. Hence our reference to KZN. There must also be a capacity to manage the contracts of the private security company. What we are sharing with the meeting is what KZN has put in place just to manage the contracts that they have with the security company. We are trying to highlight the gaps that exist in other provinces where such capacity does not exist or if any is very limited. So the question of outsourcing and in-house security is an issue that is being debated, and if you may recall, Chair, Labour is also calling for government to do away with outsourcing of security services. And we would like also to say that as we do that, we must also recognize that we also have to look at the cost of outsourcing versus in-house security and look at whether the amount of money we spend on in-house security versus outsourcing, whether we can use those funds to employ extra security and train and ensure that you've got adequately trained people. I'm just raising that because these are issues that are currently being debated, and we cannot provide those answers at this stage because they are a subject of a debate, a foresight that is also subject of a debate in a broader scheme of things as part of security cluster strategy in response to security problems overall in the country. There are specific questions that have been raised, which some I refer to Dr. Funani, who was part of the task team and who spent quite a lot of time with the team. What we're presenting here is just a report on the outcome of the preliminary work that we've done in the provinces and some of the problems that we've identified. But we're also mindful of the fact that because this was just a preliminary work, we're going to do further work, which is far more detailed, can answer some of the questions that have been raised. But Chair and Honourable Members, I would like to say that if you look at the norms and standards that have been adopted by NHC, it is clear that we take safety and security as an issue of compliance that provinces have to ensure that on an ongoing basis they comply with. The norms and standards that have been adopted address the safety and security issue, safety for patients as well as safety for health workers. But I'd also like to say that the settings under which some of the problems occur can be avoided. There are a few things that we've identified, Chair, that can be addressed. For instance, I've got a list of problems that have been identified where we can actually introduce measures and deal with these problems. The first being that for all those facilities where there are construction work, it's quite clear that we never take security into account. There aren't any means of identifying people who are part of the construction work and normal employees of the facility of a province or any other arrangement. But we've also identified the weaknesses in security, like I indicated earlier, the where security members are used, officials are used as porters, and they leave the security spots unmended. Instances, for instance, in the TB, MDR TB hospital, where patients who want to be discharged use butane to scare off security, and security runs away. We've got those reports. We also know of instances where security people are in cahoots with the management, like you said. But on the management issues, as you know, we did the assessment. You are aware that there are regulations that were published on Friday, and these regulations stipulate appropriate level of management for each hospital that has been designated and the categories that have been determined by the National Health Council. Now, we probably need to recognize, Chair and Honourable Members, that we cannot divorce management issues from the overall running of the facility. But we also welcome the suggestions and recommendations that have been made that perhaps we need to come up with a norm. But we already have norms and standards. But perhaps what we need additional to that is a norm guided by the security cluster, but also resolve the issue about whether do we do away with the private security companies, or do we do away with in-house security, or do we have a combination of both? And if we do have a combination of both, what is the best possible mix for each type of security? And those are sort of the kind of discussions that we'd like to have that should inform policy. Chair, I'd like to give Dr. Funani an opportunity to respond specifically to some of the questions that were raised, because some of them were addressed in the TASTI meetings that we had recently. Thank you.
Thanks, DC. Chairperson, Honourable Members. Just to go through some of the specific questions. The first one was regarding statistics in provinces. As the DG has indicated, this was the very first meeting, and we saw that what provinces have done is not comprehensive. Hence, we would like to have a very structured and systematic approach on assessing and addressing some of the key questions that you have raised here. So the Honourable Member asked a very pertinent question as to have incidents dropped in KZN as a result of improved contract management. Those are some of the issues that when we interrogate the report further, we'll find out exactly what has happened. So it is part and parcel of the work in progress, and we'll certainly ensure that we'll be able to answer those questions when we come back with the report. The other question that was asked was regarding primary healthcare facilities, which is also a weakness that we identified. I think some provinces, for example, Mpumalanga was specific, they only dealt with hospitals. And with Northwest, they dealt with hospitals and CHCs, but selected. Primary healthcare facilities do not seem to have been audited in these. And that is a serious concern, and the members have very well explained that it does lead to service delivery problems with facilities not being able to open for 24 hours. And with the move then towards strengthening primary health care, it becomes then an anomaly that you would focus on hospital services, but the platform for service delivery is primary health care. So it needs to be strengthened, as the Honourable Member has said, and we must make sure that the assessment does go all the way to assess the safety and security issues at primary healthcare facilities. And some of them differ in size. I mean, there are community health centers that by law currently should open for 24 hours. There are clinics that, depending depending on the volume and the catchment population, might have to open for 24 hours. So those have to be dealt with and addressed so that the safety of patients and staff is not compromised. There was a question regarding the equipment and the funding of CCTV and budget for security. Maybe that one I'd leave to the DG, because there are some grant issues that we, the department can look at, but maybe should flag that before we conclude. The time frame. The task team, honourable member, has been set to give the minister the report by end of November this year. So the time frames are quite tight. It was very clearly stipulated in the NEC resolution that by such and such a date, this should have happened, the task team should have convened. We just didn't want to bring all those details. But the deadline is that by end of November this year, the task team should present a report to the minister that then he can table to the NHC, and the minister with the MECs can decide on what is to be done moving forward. The rotation of security officers, I think it was from the chairperson. It is one of the issues that KZN was citing as an example to say familiarity, and people, then it makes it easy that when you see the same person, sometimes they don't even say, they say, hey, they greet you and they know you well, and then they let you go. But there are some strategies that some provinces are using to say, stipulating in the contract that your security personnel must be rotated within facilities for those reasons. And what we've seen in KZN, the security company seems to be getting so some of the contract management strategies then are those of making sure that the rotation, and the advantage of the way they've done the contract is that they award contracts to companies to be in charge of a district, for example. Then it becomes easy to move people within a district rather than pay facility where you then have difficulties. If you're the sole company and you're looking after that institution, then the latitude to be able to move people around becomes a little bit difficult. And the contracts are very specific. Depending on the threat level, they would assign various grades of security personnel. And some of them, for example, in certain areas where they've assessed that threat levels are high, they will then stipulate that either there be an armed guard on site or there should be a patrol or armed response available. So there are various ways that you can then design your service level agreement based on the threat level that you assess within the vicinity of the facility. And then the issue of panic buttons, etc., those are some of the issues that we'll investigate and find out exactly what are the possibilities. And some would relate to the upgrading of physical infrastructure at the facility level. So we've taken note of the comments from the honourable member regarding the involvement of police, and they are part of the task team, and the DG has said there's a high level discussion at FOSAT. We will be guided by that discussion. What came out very clearly from the task team was that there are certain functions that cannot be done by any other person other than the state security services. So for example, certain assessments. So it is very clear, and we have to make sure that we comply with the relevant laws and regulations with regard to that. Hence, and the SATS and other security services are part of the task team to advise us so that we do not overstep the money. For example, when we realize that we will need an independent security expert, there was an option of going to a private security person, but those people are the very ones who will be bidding for the state tender, so we thought it's better to use a parastatal trust, rather, where people are unlikely to be, just to learn from them what they've done and what are the possibilities, to avoid someone who might sit in these meetings and then come up with policies that might benefit some of their companies. So these are some of the issues that were also raised by the task team members, that we need to be aware that when we invite experts, we must not invite security experts who are, in the long run, might bid for contracts and be in a better position than previous position. Career passing. I think the issue of career passing, honourable member, there are two streams on how we look at it. The task members have mentioned that there needs to be security functions. I mean, some of the recommendations are saying preferably at cluster level, chief director level, reporting to either the LEC and directly to the head of department. And then those should have in-house security managers at facility level, at district level. So those are some of the people that we say they belong to the department, they are staff of the department. They need them to be skilled and make sure that they attend all the relevant courses. With regard to the private one, I think once the issue is resolved as to whether we move towards in-housing or using private sector, then it will become clearer on how we can assist them with career pathing. But there are no clear job descriptions sometimes, because you find some officers, the car is stopped, they open the boot, they close. When you ask them, what are you looking for? They can't tell you. So it needs to be specified to, in their job description that when you open a car, you look for this, you look for this. If it's in a hospital, you check if there's no medicine or equipment. If there's equipment, you ask where you're taking it, because that's where the weaknesses are. People just open the boot, they see something, they close. You're not sure if they're looking for computers, printers, if there's a medicine, they leave it. So those are some of the reasons why we're saying job description should be defined and people should be told exactly what they must do when they are I think the DG then will address the 2.1 regarding assets and the other one on funding for security issues.
Chair, perhaps what I would like to do, I did not include the outcome of the audits that are underway. We are currently doing audits of 4,210 facilities. By end of July, we had actually finished about 876 of those. And some aspects of that are about the norms and standards that we've published, and others relate specifically to management issues. So at an appropriate time, if you allow us, Chair, we will share the outcome of the audit with yourself. And the second issue, Chair, I wanted to raise on assets. We've just concluded the development of an electronic asset register. And we're going to roll it out to provinces. And our start date was supposed to August, and in particular what we wanted to do is that for any asset in a particular facility, it should be electronic, but people should be able to physically identify it. So we've just started that exercise in the National Department of Health. We've completed that, and we will be rolling it out. And the first province that we're going to start with, Chair, is Eastern Cape. Just so that you know, Chair. With regard to the financing of security, when we met with SAMA, they had a list of recommendations. I mean, they were suggesting that you must have a metal detector in every facility, CCTV. Every facility. Our view is that it's not affordable. But we are saying, Chair, within the hospital revitalization grant and the infrastructure grant that we have oversight on as National Department of Health, we would like to see what should be the percentage of money that should be allocated for security services within those grants, so that we use that as a basis of allocating adequate resources. And we are still doing that cost, because we are also looking at what is the percentage of money that should be allocated for maintenance. And when we are done with that exercise, we'll be able to know exactly what the allocation system should be and how much should go for security, maintenance, and so on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Lydia. It's good that you didn't worry about them when they were laughing, when you talked about these kids, but... We agree that when time is right, we'll call you for this audit so that you could inform. they are doing with the money that we voted during, that we gave you. I think the deadlines have been mentioned. There's just one pertinent question, probably it's not going to you, Tishu, but it's going to the members of Parliament. You know, one tends to think that we don't need to be discussing what we're discussing. Only if people don't like what government is doing for them. Because these things are done for communities, and communities look after their institutions. Or they should know who's doing what so that they can deal with those things. But the fact that this is happening, it means the communities are not looking, or they are not happy with what we're doing for them. Maybe it's the politicians who are supposed to tell people that, look, this clinic is built for you, and it's helping you, so you should look after it properly yourself. Maybe that's what we're not doing well, because we wouldn't be having this type of meeting if people were interested in their facilities. We've got about 10 minutes. I know we asked about the allowance for danger allowance. We don't know whether you have it, whether is it still there or it is not there. But the other thing about
it's in the bargaining chamber. It's a matter of discussion with the unions. So I don't know if I cannot express a view on it at this stage. Yes, because it's a matter of discussion with labor.
So we've got about 10 minutes if there are any questions, but if there are no questions, I see who want to. Maybe you're not going to narrate today about what the security people need to know, what to look for. Because I'm told that one of them stopped somebody who was driving a Beetle, and he went to the boot and looked, and there was the engine. And he said, this is what you have actually stolen from the hospital. The engine of the car.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe if DG can explain to us, or maybe to me, if the province say we ensure that there's security where there are hotspots, actually what are hotspots? For you coming from Pretoria, you're told hotspots.
Chair, without pointing a finger at any province, it's where they are gangsters. That was those were the examples that were given to us. The gangsters are a problem because what has happened in some instances, they follow the wounded patients to the wards, and it poses risks to both not only the health personnel, but also the patients, other patients who are admitted in hospital. Those are examples that are shared with us.
Yeah, the last one, then we go for it.
Chairperson, maybe I didn't hear the BG. We talked around, we asked questions around the availability of the budget. Because it won't be advisable for us to sit here and come up with good documents out of this meeting while at the end of the day there is not going to be budget. Is there any budget whereby all the clinics can be covered, all the hospitals can be covered with necessary equipment?
Thank you, Honourable Member. I thought I, in a way, addressed that, but I'll repeat what I said earlier, that we are looking at what the cost of security should be, and we're trying to look at the current infrastructure and hospital revitalization grant, because that is the basis on which for every facility for which there's a grant, we need to see whether there are any options to provide for security, because it has not been the basis on which we planned in the past, not for security, not for maintenance. And we're addressing both issues in the manner in which grants, both the infrastructure grant that we've taken over as well as the hospital revitalization grant.
Okay, that should be the real last one.
That's a recommendation, Chairperson. As you said that provincial audit assessments and consultant assessments on audit and on safety and security are done mostly in the hospital. That is a concern, maybe because I come from a rural province, state case. Because there are no police stations in rural areas, they are always left behind. If the audit and assessment can also safety security can also be done right there in the rural areas. As we say that they lack everything, they lack the police stations, they have no places to report. There is no safety security in fact. And some of them can only record light during the night. That's concerned about that. Taking care of the
claims. Thank you. Yes, honourable member, the audits are for all 4,210 facilities.
You must know she's coming from the center. That's why she's so passionate about rurality. I think we'll come to an end. This is the story about the security in the health facilities. We might not have all the answers, and some of the questions are not on the Department of Health, they are beyond the Department of Health, but that's what we have got, and we'll wait for some of those things that are going to come, and we'll call you for the audit report. But I must say, members, without asking communities to take law into their hands, but I think it's important that as members of Parliament, we must make people aware that these are their properties. And they should look after them. I remember one time in the same Eastern Cape, a certain community, there's a nurse that was raped, and we went into that clinic, and it was very simple. We just told the community there that if you keep on raping the nurses that are here, then allow us to close this clinic so that there's no facility here. The next time we went there, it was them who was looking at, they were looking after the clinic because they wanted. And they knew exactly what was doing the thing, and they told us who was doing the thing, because the community themselves can look after themselves, and if they want the facility. It's only that sometimes they don't look after their facilities, but I think it's on us, the onus is on us as members to tell them to look after their facilities that are built by government. I just want to close on that note, and we can go for the and come back in 10 minutes on any time. Thank you for now.